Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis, sometimes even insight into the media issues of the week, and we are happy to have you with us. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Good morning. I'm a happy man. We've had a wonderful fund drive, a day to make $1 million, plus the lockbox. Incredible.
And good afternoon and good evening to you all as well. Morning, afternoon, evening, whatever time of day you're listening to this program. You can always download it, by the way, at wamc.org. Rosemary Armeo is here, investigative journalist and former professor at UAlbany. How
Hello.
Are you? And Barbara Lombardo, longtime executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record, newspapers here in New York's Capital Region, now teaching. What are your students talking about these days?
I was happy to know that most of the students had heard about the impeachment inquiries.
They heard about it. Oh, man. What do you think is a solution to try to get young people to pay attention to what's going on in the world around them? Or should we not worry about it? I mean, if they're 18, 19 years old, should we not worry so much about this?
I think we should be very, very worried and doing whatever we can. And an example of something that I did with our class last week was we all read the telephone transcript of that call from the president to Zelensky. Hmm. Not a transcript, whatever they're calling it.
Call notes.
The call notes, thank you. Yeah. So we read that, we looked at it, we talked about like what elements of it would you report on, how would you present it. So part of my plan was then to actually have them have to read the document, think about it.
That's
and
good.
Then the offshoot
original
of that is
material.
They then you accidentally on purpose are also learning about what's going on.
Hmm. That's pretty clever. Howard Schneider, the founding dean of the journalism school at University of Stony Brook, used to have an exercise with his news literacy students where he would tell them for, I think it was 10 days, that they were not allowed to consume any news whenever they found news being reported around them, whether it was the weather report or the sports game or anything, they were supposed to avoid it. And he said that students were amazed to find out how much the news seeped into their environment, that in today's society, there is news constantly kind of what we may broadly call news, actually touching them. They found it hard to avoid, actually.
Well, that's not the situation on the campus I teach at, I would say regrettably.
So I've always had a premise that the more you pay for college and university, the more likely you are to read the newspapers. I think with privilege comes a certain amount of ownership of what's going on around you.
I'm not sure
I
that
don't agree
sound
with that
science.
Yeah.
I mean, there are other, if you can pay a lot for college, you've grown up in an elite household.
Right, that's right.
Where you're more likely to have seen books and newspapers. And
precisely, Rosemary. Yeah. So we don't really disagree, even though you'd like to make a fight of it.
I just wanted to say that your science was unsound.
Did I say anything about science? I just said you what I believe.
No, I know, and you didn't say quid pro quo either.
Right.
Okay.
Causality
but
versus coincidence, right?
What I worry about are these students, and I also taught with Barbara at UAlbany, so I hope we're not just
as
maligning
did I,
that
by the
school.
Way.
Yes, as did Alan. I hope we're not just maligning that school. I don't think we are, but there's so much talk now of millennials reviving the political process and taking back democracy, and I don't see them all that engaged or knowledgeable. Yes, they like Bernie. I'm not sure they even know why, and they don't vote.
They did,
in 2018. Okay, I hear this.
There
but
we go.
As you know, Rex, 1 year is not a trend.
Right.
Well, what did happen in 2018? Just remind us.
Well, 2018 was the first election at which you could rail against the horror of 2018 and vote a different way. Sorry, 2016 and vote a different way. And millennials did come out, and they have made climate change especially a cause. And so maybe we'll see a difference. But there's not a whole lot in history to indicate that we should have hope in that quarter.
And I would also just, in UAlbany's, not a defense, but in speaking with adjuncts and professors at other universities, including private universities, We all share that same concern where students are not following the news.
So that was a shot. That was a shot when you said including private universities. That was a shot against my thesis.
Take it as you will.
One of the difficulties that's confronting them now is that while student participation was so much higher in the last election, there is now a concerted effort underway in many states to restrict student access to voting. In Texas, for example, in particular, there's a new law that's been set up that makes it very difficult to have, Texas has 3 weeks of voting. They have early voting all the time, and makes it very difficult to have polling places near campuses. So I think you will see a significant downturn in this year's and perhaps next year's elections if we don't have more access to the polls on the part of the students.
Well, you know, Rex, I want to take us from Texas to New York State, where that was a big issue for a while. We were insisting, especially when the Republicans were in control of the legislature and the governorship, we were insisting that they could only vote from their home. So if they were at the University of Albany and they came from Long Island, which many of them do, they would have to go home to vote. Well, it turns out that there was a federal judge named Neil McKern who had been a congressman, who had tried to run for Congress and lost by just a little bit. And we all knew that if the kids were allowed to vote, he would have won. Eventually, the decision came up to him. Should students be allowed to vote from where they were in college or living? And he said, in his judicial opinion, yes, they have to be given an opportunity. So in New York State, people can vote from their dormitories. Now, getting them from the dormitory to the voting machine, that's another whole problem.
Absolutely.
Well, they have trouble getting to the classrooms. to be cynical about it.
Yes. So listen, a lot of young people, of course, get their news and information from social media. A lot of people in general do. It's not just young people. But there is now, of course, such a pushback, including hearings on Capitol Hill that are quite contentious involving Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook. And the question is, will anything actually occur to make Facebook a little bit more, let's say, responsible about what it presents? Facebook, some may say, simply sees news as a way to make money off the ads. They're not actually doing very much to try to use the immense power of their platform to present real journalism.
Well, they are setting up. There's one hope for Facebook, and that's this kind of ombudsman-like panel. They're setting up a citizens committee that would listen to complaints and actually do the work of an ombudsman in the old days in newspapers and other media outlets where you act as a broker between the news outlet, which Facebook is, and the public. Zuckerberg himself told Congress rightly this week that I may not be the best messenger for bringing about trust in the company, which is true, is almost the next thing to a robot. The Congress did a much better job this year than they did in 2018 questioning Zuckerberg. You had younger Congress people who actually knew what Facebook was, may have used it, and knew what social, right?
Right.
They didn't ask completely stupid questions that he could run circles around them. But he did well enough that he didn't make a big mistake, didn't look like an idiot or really hurt the company. But they really only do care about money.
Well, and they are strip mining the news from our genuine news sites and building their own advertising around it. Yes, we get some digital traffic from social media, but it is in no way commensurate to the impact of that news being siphoned off into their platforms.
Well, you know, Rex, that's just the way it is. I mean, you know, as much as you as an editor of a paper which has to get advertising and the rest of it, it's just the way it is that Facebook and the other portals have gotten a lot of what you once owned. That's very important. Now, I read yesterday a piece where a reporter said Zuckerberg had a smirk on his face. I was concerned about that. The idea.
His face.
I watched it. I think that's his face. Yeah.
By the way,
Barbara's right. I didn't see his. He was very respectful. When there were very antagonistic questions, as there ought to have been, and he would always respond, "Thank you for the question, Congressman or woman," and he tried his best. I don't know that I agree with what you said. I say that so many times.
With what I said about
yeah, yeah, it's just
said,
the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, the government does have a role in this. Zuckerberg has set up a gigantic company. That's what antitrust laws are for. He runs roughshod over competition. That's what government is supposed to step in. He wants now a cryptocurrency. He wants to set up his own shadow government. The government damn well ought to be interested in stopping that.
I agree with everything you've just said. One of the things that's so important, however, is what people understand based on watching news accounts, for example, of Zuckerberg's testimony. You know, I think most people will have no idea of what happened. I think the one thing you talked about is the cryptocurrency.
Libra.
I think that's pretty important. Nevertheless, you know, I didn't get the feeling that the news media was really breaking it down appropriately so that people understood what was going on there.
I think they have to go back to it. The news media was completely distracted from that hearing by what was happening with the impeachment
process. The same time,
I think they were distracted. And what the public is going to see was actually AOC asking fantastic questions about political ads on Facebook. That had nothing to do with the hearing that was set up. He was supposed to only talk about Libra. And Maxine Waters and AOC and other members of that committee, which is really put together, they asked great questions about their overall philosophy and way of working.
And just saying that things are just the way it is, Alan, is it's kind of like saying in the 1970s, well, the phone company is the phone company. And of course, the federal government stepped in. And the result was a breakup of the phone company, the single monolith that the Bell system had been. And as a result, we had the innovation that came from the competition. So maybe some kind of breakup of Facebook is what needs to be what people are now talking about.
Rex, as spokesman for a huge media organization for Hearst, you're not the official spokesman, as a member of a huge media organization,
point taken.
What do you see as an acceptable or possible solution to Facebook or other entities like it taking the news that costs a lot of money to create and not compensating the news
providers?
We gather.
We don't create news. I would like to make that clear.
Oh, create. I'm sorry. We take an idea. We gather it. We report it. We write it. We broadcast it. Present it. We watch as it's stolen.
Well, Rex has been PO'd about
Thank
this.
Thank you.
Rex has been PO'd about this for quite a while.
Well, everybody who cares about journalism ought to be PO'd about it because it costs money to gather information. 60% of every advertising dollar spent digitally goes to Facebook and Google. All of the advertising dollars in the world digitally, 60% of it goes to Facebook and Google. That leaves cents, pennies, fractions of pennies for little people like the Times
Union. So will you answer Barbara's question?
I don't know exactly what needs to be done. If I were the king of the world, I don't know quite what I would do. I would actually look for a good inquiry for thoughtful people to fashion a response. But I do think that there is a certain movement at this point towards saying that Facebook is, in fact, in a restraint of trade. They have gotten so big that they are dominating the landscape and industry in a way that in our capitalist system we have said is inappropriate. So it may well be that it needs to be broken up into...
I know this is the media project, but I think Facebook's effect on media, bad as it is the least of the problems. We have invasion of privacy. We have the use of individual data to be sold to business corporations. We have the impact on our elections, which has not been good. The impact on democracy that we need to be worried about, Congress needs to be worried on, not just, you know, oh, it's hurting newspapers.
So let me go back to, if I may, Rex's point a little while earlier about the phone company. And the phone company got busted up. I want to know from you guys whether you think that the Facebook dilemma that you're talking about is identical to the phone companies or whether there was something about the phone companies which was more alienating to the people.
More alienating to the people.
It may be an inarticulate phrase there, Rex, as you quite frequently point out, but what I'm saying is I think people really hated the phone company.
Well, they got a bill every month. Yeah. You know, you don't get a bill for Facebook. Yeah. It feels free, so you can't complain about it as much.
Good point.
I do think it was more personal because of that.
Yeah.
But the situation is extremely similar.
Well, now you know it, and Rex may know it. Each of you for your own reasons. You intellectually, Rex is running a big newspaper, as Barbara pointed out, which brings in a lot of money and less money now because of what's going on. And so is there something that's likely to happen as a result of you guys, or is what you think shared by, as we used to say, the people?
I don't know, but I do think that policymakers need to step forward sometimes and step ahead of an issue. Something needs to be done to save local journalism, and I don't just mean to save the Hearst-owned Times Union. I'm talking about the communities, especially the small rural communities, the small communities where newspapers are dying and where the newspapers have been the only way to get great local news to these people. They need to have it. There needs to be a multiplicity of voices. People need to know what's going on, and they need to value it. And that Facebook is a significant contributor to that decline.
So let me ask you, Rex, because you on this program got my attention a number of years ago when you said that in 10 years, I think that was the quote, we probably won't have most newspapers in the United States. Have you changed your mind?
Well, that might have been 10 years ago. Yeah. We're resilient. I think that
I don't know if it was 10 years ago.
We'll be an awful lot of 7-day papers have become 6-day, will become 5-day, will become 3-day. That is a trend that is happening.
Will they become no day?
Well, we're seeing that happening.
So have you changed your mind?
Hundreds have disappeared. I think we will have significant local news organizations that will be shrunken, far shrunken from what they used to be, as my newsroom is. And we'll have a lot of communities that don't have newspapers anymore. Youngstown, Ohio, the most recent. In New Orleans, of course, lost its paper, and it's now served by an out-of-town paper from Baton Rouge. And the same thing is happening. You sent around a note to us to pay attention to Ann Arbor, Michigan, where the Ann Arbor News has gone out of business, and now the local student newspaper for the University of Michigan is basically the major news source.
That's an incredible story, isn't it?
Yes,
it is amazing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. You went to Columbia where you were at the top, you graduated at the top of your class, Rex, in the J School. I've mentioned that a number of times, almost every program. So my question to you is, is this a look of the future, that the student newspapers will become the newspaper of a city or a town?
Well, just to be clear, Columbia is only a graduate school, and it doesn't put out a newspaper, and there I think there is an undergraduate paper, but I mean, I don't have any experience in this from that. I don't know. I think that it's wonderful if you have a tradition of a great student newspaper. Missouri, University of Missouri, Columbia, Missouri, has a TV station operated by the students. The NBC affiliate in town is the affiliate of the Journalism School at the University of Missouri. The Indiana Daily Student, the Texas Daily at the University of Texas. There are a lot of wonderful student newspapers that actually serve their communities and compete effectively, but I don't think it's an alternative.
You have to be a pretty big and well-funded and savvy operation. It is encouraging that there are students who care enough to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's students, you know, at UAlbany who are doing a very good job with the Albany Student Press and with their newspaper, with the ASP, which is a campus-level operation.
It's not something
that... And they're trying to, you know, bring back a Society of Professional Journalists chapter to that. So there's hope.
Right.
It is far away. I think communities served only by student newspapers are not well served. They're students. They don't know what they're doing. And the stories that they are going to do, you struggle to make them understandable. That's not a level of professionalism that allows you to go do investigative reporting, for example, or to do high stakes journalism. When the few times, and there are times, I do admit, where news is broken by newspapers. Arizona just did it. They were the first to report on a national story. That's national news in and of itself. That's not what student newspapers are supposed to do. You go there to learn the craft, not to be the service for a community.
And then we always have the issue of who controls the student press. Is it a faculty advisor who is ultimately calling the shots, or are the students themselves?
Well, yeah, it's true. A billion years ago, I went to Syracuse University, which is a New York State school that does have an undergraduate journalism program, private, and it did have a student newspaper, and I wouldn't work for it because this was in the 70s, and there was all anti-war fervor, and it became a propaganda rag. It's like, no, I can't use any clips from this to get jobs. This is not journalism. This is advocacy. So, yeah, that's possible, and if it's a student-run newspaper, which most of them are, they have control over advertising and publishing. It's just fraught with danger. It's a lovely idea as a citizen journalist that people in the community themselves will rise up and give the news, but it doesn't really happen. You get actual news that makes a difference in people's lives when you're a professional operation, and the bigger, the better the operation.
Yeah, it's true, because if my newsroom shrinks so much that I don't have enough reporters to cover individual beats, my reporters will become generalists, which is what TV reporters have to be because their newsrooms are smaller. And you won't have the kind of expertise that enables newspapers to break stories. That's the way that the news ecosystem has always worked. There's a proposal now in the state legislature, and actually Governor Cuomo in New York has indicated support for it. A couple of Democratic state senators are proposing a requirement that any cable company operating in New York offer a local news channel with the news, weather, and public affairs programming. What do we think about this?
Well, they'd have to hire real journalists.
Yeah, okay. I thought it was kind of bizarre that they would require news. And then who's really going to regulate what's happening? New York Public Service Commission is going to decide what's qualifies as local news? Give me
right.
a break.
Right. What is local news is actually a very good point. The prime example of it, I suppose, is in the Capital Region, Spectrum News, which is the cable operation of Time Warner here, which does report what's going on locally, but it's not doing, again, as Rosemary says, it's not doing investigative reporting. It's not doing watchdog accountability journalism.
There's or any no kind substitute. Of expertise journalism.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't want to completely slam this. I like that they are trying something different to help local news. And really, perhaps we should give it a chance. They could do it right. And the commission only would make sure that they actually were providing a station. It would be the community. It would be the rest of us in actual media who would be saying whether their job was good enough. And I could point to one at least local channel that's privately owned and operated in the old way. And it's horrible. It's been kidnapped by Trump supporters. That's not good local coverage either.
As always, you make great points. However,
what is that expression? Don't listen to anything anyone says before the but.
You make a point. But I'm thinking it's never a good thing when politicians put their hands on news. So when they start saying, as you've just pointed out, what some of the pitfalls are, you should put on this kind of news, and they put their hands on it, they say, this is what you have to be doing, that puts the hair on the back of my neck up a little bit.
Yeah, it is of concern. However, there are examples of dollars coming from governments to subsidize news organizations that have worked. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting provides some funding for TV and radio in this country. The BBC in the UK is subsidized by government and is very proud of its independence, so it can work.
You know, Rex, that's interesting that you bring that up, because a number of years ago, I think we've talked about this before, a group showed up here from the BBC, and I think Thatcher was then the prime minister, and they had been told, you've been on the dole long enough, you have to start making your own way. This is exactly what I'm talking about, which is when they give you money and sooner or later they believe they own you, and that is something that makes me very, very nervous.
On the other hand, the alternative appears to be the loss, the total loss of these really important watchdog institutions.
Well,
so it's time for desperate measures.
The Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Rosemary, has definite rules in terms of you're getting a certain amount of money. We get very little money from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, I think 5% of our budget, something like that. But they have very definite rules about how many years in advance the money comes and how it's protected, and that's good. But how long that kind of thing lasts, you know, you show me a politician who has got his grubby hands on the news media, and then sooner or later they're going to say, cut them off.
It's lasted for 50 years, the
yes,
CPB, you know,
yeah.
and so I think that in America we now have a tradition of it. While administrations have tried to cut it off, even the Trump administration hasn't been able to do so.
Right.
And I think the fight for public broadcasting ought to be to get greater support from tax dollars so that you could actually expand your journalism operation and do some of the local reporting to take the place, perhaps, of some of the places that have fallen down,
that's
the news desert.
And if you run a cable company, you have a lot of power to reach a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So the concept of tacking onto that a requirement that you are somehow serving your community with news is not a terrible concept. When they say it has to be independently produced, you can't just be running what somebody else is producing, raise questions in my mind about, you know, could this be accomplished by teaming up with local newspapers or news gatherers so that without breaking other laws, so that it helps survive, it helps the local news organizations survive and thrive, and you're teaming up, partnering with other entities.
No one's going to watch it anyway. All the young people are going to tune into Netflix and Hula and games. So,
well, you go with
TV news is not any stronger than
Rosemary.
Paper products right now.
Rosemary has a great way of cutting right to the chase.
Nobody's
going to watch it anyway.
Although we've seen other surveys that say that people are still getting their news from television.
But declining.
Yeah, and television is going to have the same trouble the newspapers have had.
Absolutely.
They're just behind us a little bit, though they are sustained by the every other year influx of ad dollars.
And remember that the TV stations, we all know this, Rex, you've told us this a number of times, have been stealing from you for years anyway and relying on the newspapers.
Well, it's not only TV. We had another local newspaper who simply swiped one of our breaking news stories this week and did not attribute it. And our managing editor, Casey Seiler, is very good about calling the editors of those papers and saying, hey, what gives? Why did you take our story and not say this is first reported by the Times Union? We get a little annoyed at that.
Yeah,
it happens all the damn time.
That's all the healthy competition we have. We had a $1 million fund drive, as I said. I don't remember reading that piece in the Times Union.
Oh, geez. It's not news, Alan.
when you do a fund drive, $1 million in less a day.
You do that all the time.
Oh, man. It's not news.
I say that's worth telling the public about.
Thank you, Barbara.
I have a student.
We do a little brief item every time, because it happens every time, three times a year. There's $1 million, and we do a nice little story about it to make Alan feel better.
Oh,
thank you, Alan.
It is news.
I'm astounded that it was done to make you feel better.
If the drive failed.
We're talking about. It's not local news that Alan gets his voice on the radio. It's great.
Oh, okay, this is degenerating. Very unhealthy. I'll meet you outside.
So are you saying that there wasn't even a report of like a paragraph long saying the drive?
There almost always is. Yeah, the last time there was, that might not have happened yet. I didn't realize the fun drive had come and gone. It was so fast. It was so great. But that's part of
I'll
why.
Stop, Rex. You're sounding defensive.
I'll take that as a compliment.
I actually don't pay attention to one paragraph stories that often in the paper, with all due respect to the people who write the briefs. But Alan, you know what?
Know
I'm going to go back to the office and knock some heads together and say, why wasn't there a story about Alan Shartok's radio station getting the money that it got?
It's not my radio station, and you know that. It is our radio station. That's ridiculous.
And I'm very happy to be here and proud of the work that we do here at the Media Project. Thank you all for joining us, listeners, and having the patience. Rosemary Armeo and Barbara Lombardo and Alan Shartok and I'm Rex Smith in the Times Union. Thanks to our patient producer, David Gustina, and to you all for joining us this week on the Media Project.
Represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.